And my job title is Digital Library Architect. I've been working with digital libraries for nearly 21 years, and I have managed at least a dozen different content management systems, some proprietary. In the last 15 years, most of them have been open source-based content management systems. I've managed 5 different migrations with different systems from one to another. So I've got a lot of hands-on experience with it. I wouldn't call myself a really high-level programmer, but I kind of know how to get things done. It's not always maybe the least lines of code used, but it gets the job done. So what we're here to discuss today is CMS, Content Management Systems, and specifically, how well do they work for newspapers? How well do they, work poorly for newspapers? In general, I want to talk a little bit about, kind of how they work in general, to make sure everyone's kind of on the same page with that understanding of that. And I'll tell you a little bit about how I kind of got into, or kind of Edward wanted me to do this. We manage a big newspaper site, which we've been managing for about 10 years now. It started with our involvement with the NDNP project. It's the Kentucky Digital Newspaper Program. And we're coming to the end of a migration process with that. And it's kind of an interesting migration because it's migrating from a very powerful physical server, meaning one that we stick in a rack in a building on campus and manage. And it's got 16 CPUs and a lot of storage, a lot of RAM. And it works, the site is very fast. Our data center is closing down and moving everything to the cloud. And so we've been given a year and a half to migrate everything off of physical servers into a virtual server. At the same time, funding gets cut a lot and there are priorities. Some projects get more funding than others. And the newspaper project is a part of our strategic plan, but it's kind of not the first priority on the strategic plan. So I was basically told, see how economically, see how low cost you can do this in a virtual environment. And I took that seriously. And so in migrating it, I was, kind of benchmarking all the different things that taxed the CPU, the utilization of the processing power of the server. Because I was initially looking at moving from 16 CPUs to 2. And one of the things I realized pretty quickly is a big drag on the CPU was having to dynamically generate the pages as they were requested by users accessing the site. So the other thing I knew from 10 years of experience with the newspapers is serial metadata does not change. You don't need to edit it very often. I mean, I think over the course of 10 years, it's probably less than a dozen times we've had to edit a record, So that dynamic process of generating the page, I didn't see a whole lot of difference between, well, why don't I just generate all the static pages, put them in a directory storage format that's, not going to have 10,000 files in the directory. And I'll talk about that a little bit if you're interested. And, and see how that performs. And I did that. And so there's the data set I was dealing with was 82,000 issues, and it takes about 3 hours with 2 CPUs on the server to generate all those static HTML pages and put them in place. And it drastically improved the performance of the site. Really, all the site CPU, most of what it does now is simply searching the solar, the big index, the full text index. And then when a page is requested, it simply, serves it. It doesn't have to generate it first. So there's been a lot of talk more so today than yesterday about kind of the specific thing about, these CMSs are database driven and dynamic. And what that means is, you have a system in the CMS, the content management system, where you can input metadata. It saves it in a database. Generally, it's what's called a MySQL database often. And then when a page is requested, the database takes the request, goes to the correct record, feeds the feeds the metadata into some template engine, a template generator, which basically filters the metadata and feeds it into an HTML template, which it then caches for the user to load in their browser. And that's actually more work for the server to do than to simply, you know, access the page that already exists. So the downside of that for news, and what we've discussed a bit today, is so basically what you have with the CMS in that case is basically a database and a template through which the data in that database is represented on the fly temporarily. So if the CMS changes, it's very difficult to, often very difficult to put the data in a new system, as the New York folks were talking about, and have the same representation happen, certainly seamlessly. It's not easy. often you have the data format changes that, you know, one CMS wants you to load maybe comma-separated value data, another may want XML. The New York folks were talking about JSON they load into their CMS system. So there's a lot of issues. Migration can cause loss of data, or, you know, a change in the functionality of the website. On top of all this, one thing to consider is that none of these systems are going to last forever. Anyone that you adopt today, within the next, you know, it might be
2 years,
a decision that your administrator makes that we want to move to this cool new one, and it may be 2 years after you've just migrated, but if they want to do that and they've got money to do it, you're going to have to migrate to that new system. Or it may be, you know, that the technology has become so outdated in the one that you're using that you know, there's security issues or other kinds of technological issues that make it you know, desirable, if not necessary, to move to the content management system. So the other thing to consider is that some of these things are proprietary, meaning that the source code that runs them and sort of how they function on kind of a nitty-gritty level is a black box to the user, meaning that it's a proprietary closed technology and you're not really aware of what it's doing under the hood on many levels. Others are open source, which means you can look at the code, you can, if you are a programmer proficient enough to read the code and understand it, you can actually really figure out exactly what it's doing and how it's, you know, how it's managing the data in the system. So different people have different ideas about that. If you have more technological ability in your institution, I feel at least certainly an open source solution will give you more control over your data. On the other end, if you don't, a proprietary system takes a lot of the technological overhead off of your plate. And if you've got the money to pay for that service, you know, it could be a good idea. So one of the things that Ben Walsh talked about and that was touched upon earlier by the pod group that I was in was, you know, how do we build something into these dynamics content management systems that will produce some kind of archiving functionality. What that archiving functionality is, I think, is what we can potentially discuss a little bit today. I'm also interested in hearing from you all, you know, why you chose to come to this group, maybe what your experiences are with content management systems, if you do have some experience with them, and any ideas you've got, maybe some things that you've experienced. So, I introduced myself initially. I'm Eric Weig from the University of Kentucky Libraries Special Collections Research Center. And there's a small enough group of people in here, I think it might be good to just go around and briefly introduce ourselves. And if you do have any experience in this area that you'd like to share, go ahead and do that.
Hi, I'm Tamara Wilner. I'm a master's student at the University of Missouri. And my experience with CMS is simply as a reporter, writer, using them, never done anything technical with them. And my project related to this conference is about how should we be representing corrections in archives of online news. So I'm interested in whether, if we're undertaking a project to somehow build archiving functionality into CMSs, how will that incorporate the fact that you have, you know, your original text and then corrections and addenda on top of that?
Sound technical. I'm Chris Aldrich. Wear many hats, but I guess today I'll describe myself as a publisher and a web developer. I'm actually hosting an indie web camp in Los Angeles, the first one on this side of the low end of the West Coast in November, over in Santa Monica. I'm more interested in using the web for identity and kind of better workflows that don't include big corporate companies like Facebook and Twitter who want to own all the data. I'd rather individual users owned it and had more freedom and flexibility with how they use it. I've hacked on WordPress, Drupal. I've used Withknown. Tangentially related to that project, and probably a half a dozen other smaller CMSs, so I can break it with the best of them.
I'm Anna Kramer. I manage the Texas Digital Newspaper Program, which is run on the Portal Texas History, which is a homebrew system. I have about 20 years of system admin experience, so I used to build different CMSs back when CMSs came out and play with them. Zope and Flown for some early stuff. Drupal, WordPress. And now I really mainly just manage the newspaper program and just work with Python tools rather than doing anything with my management.
I'm Jennifer Younger, and I'm with the Catholic Research Resources Alliance, which is spearheading the project to create an archive of Catholic newspapers.
Hi, I'm Joanne Lammers. I'm with the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, Margaret Herrick Library. I'm the head of their reference files, and there are over 400,000 files devoted to film history that date from the beginning of cinema to the present. And we have analog versions, and then we also use Archive-It to archive film websites. And we're hoping to figure out a solution. Why I'm here is to deal with digital clipping, so archiving, if you know the sites IndieWire or Deadline, single articles, and then attaching keywords to those and searchable ways to find them for our researchers. Right now we are hand doing it, and they've been hand indexing for over 4 years, stamping and putting copies of different files in each subject, director, film title. And even from the digital versions, they're printing to digital. So I went from digital to paper, and I was brought in to do some digital initiatives to stop that process and find a better solution. So I have experience with Amica and WordPress and ContentDM, and then we have an in-house system that we're migrating that we're hoping will create one search, at least that's what the executive director wants, where you have one search and you find the clipping, you find the moving image, and you find the special collection material for that one person or for that one film.
Cynthia Joyce, I teach at the University of the School, I've been a journalist since the pre-CMS web. Remember, it's long when you first decided to make the background page white instead of black. And I was like, and everyone was like, how did you do that? And we were all just dealing with it. I've worked with WordPress and Drupal and some custom CMSs. Mostly use WordPress now with both the student media and my students, like in my classes and stuff. I've started using Medium quite a bit just because it's so beautiful and intuitive, and then my students are like, what the hell did you make us learn that WordPress thing when it's available to us?
So you own all the data.
I know, but anyway, I'm conflicted. But I'm interested in all of that, really, and I don't know if anybody, so Microsoft used to be the MS and MSNBC, and someone else there, I actually worked for Microsoft, and we had a CMS called Workbench, which is about as fun as it sounds, which you know.
I've heard of that one.
Workbench was a speed, and it was like scaffolding and one scaffolding. Anyway, I'm interested in just from based on experience.
Hi, I'm Dan Gaines. I was the deputy online senior editor at the Los Angeles Times for until last December, but I was there for about 15 years in that position, and I kind of ran the relationships on different platforms. But we were frustrated with the existing Tribune platforms, creating our own platforms, or using TypePad and WordPress, and was involved in the sort of complex negotiations that took place as we switched CMSs. And but now I'm a consultant for a freelance editor. My primary client is Taboola, which does ad widgets but is doing newsroom tools. And and it has a lot of data in the advertising world that we're making available to journalists, maybe, and that's where my interest, current interest is. But I have a lot of experience in CMSs and love to talk about this. That's actually why I should move up so we can read this one.
Yeah, you heard from me. I'm Mark Graham. I started my first online service in 84 for peace and bargains with human rights activists. I've been working professionally in the internet since then. I did a lot of work in the early days of Waze and Gopher. Managed like a lot of multi-million online communities. And now in an archive, in addition to a mandate of capturing the best billion pages a week, which is one of the requirements I have under a grant, get as much of the online news as I can get. And right now it's a little more than 100 million a week. And I'm working on a project to build a storytelling platform. Yeah, I'm familiar with Yasmin's work, and the Storify is interesting, and all the rest of those, half those other entities are out of business. But there's an opportunity to build a simple tool that people can use to gather a variety of media objects. And put them together with like Ken Burns effect and sounds and all the rest of that to tell interesting stories. So if I get through this launch next week of the next version of the Wayback Machine, then I get permission to do some other fun things over the next year or so. That's one of the things on my plate.
Great.
Yeah.
One more.
I'm Matt Hellman. I'm the Visual Archives Manager at Columbia, Missouri currently, and I'm also a master's candidate. I'm in my final semester. But I started off on Django when I was back in Waco with the Tribune Herald and the Baylor paper. And then I transferred up to Mizzou and they started with the same system called Blocks. Don't know if any of y'all have heard of it.
I've heard of it.
I'm learning that one, but it doesn't seem to have any archiving stuff built in either, so it's still concerning. So I'm here to find out if there is a CMS that does have good archiving.
Well, I don't think there's one that has an archiving ability built into it that is what we're talking about being desirable at this conference. Mm-hmm. Matt Walsh touched upon a few things that are kind of early on, the Memento work, that are kind of early on in their efforts. But I will say I've been to three of these conferences, and this is the first one where we've gotten to this point where we've been talking about something like a plug-in or something to enhance a content management system that would create an archiving function. Kind of two things I'd like to think about maybe in the time that we've got here as a discussion, and that is, one, in the content management system, what do you find the most important as far as the data or the output? And what I mean by that is you've got a database that feeds the content management system, which produces output that the user sees. And that's dynamic output that, is not a permanent thing. And this was a kind of an issue with New York folks when they were talking about, getting all their data the same, so that they could then have an output that was common to the data across the years. But also they made a conscious choice to side, in my opinion, from what I was reading, on the side of the data, because they basically changed the look and feel of the archival HTML or the older HTML pages. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but that's kind of the question. Do we want to preserve, in a kind of a similar analogy in my mind, is like if you had a paper newspaper in 1920, its format is far different than today. Do we load all the content from that newspaper into some system and
regenerate a printing process that makes it look like today's paper, because that's what people are used to today. Yes, it's more convenient, but I think you lose some historical perspective when you do that. So that's a big question. And then how do we, if we want to do either one of those or both, then how do we, let's discuss among us, because we all have a greater or lesser degree of experience with content management systems, what are some ideas to achieving an archival end with that? Now, certainly with the data, there's something simple as you know, a MySQL command that simply backs up the database, which most people that manage these things, you know, have those things in place that happen on a schedule. With that, I'd kind of like to open it up. So what do we think about this issue with, like, the output and preserving that versus just mainly worrying about the data that's driving the whole thing? Anyone?
I wonder if as some people alluded to earlier, the user experience is just not the same. Even now, user experience is very mobile, and desktop being the most obvious, but people reading pieces. But even Mac versus PC versus laptop versus, you know, whether you have your screen split or two, so like I've tried this, like when I, the LA Times, I just like, I thought I was like, stop worrying about what it looks like, because it doesn't look like that to most people, you know, like we have people designing things on these big, beautiful Macs. And
nobody reads it that way.
Like, how many people do we use to look at it this way? You know, so that kind of, so that, recognizing that, that's where the idea is, like, I'm not saying you can't worry about it exactly, but you just have to accept it, that people will have different experiences, certainly going forward, for the old stuff, of course, you know that most people, but even then, I think I used, in the late 80s, I was on a committee talking about how people, you know, redesigning a print newspaper, and I forgot the name of the guy, who was a famous guy, but I mean, people at newspapers didn't even understand that. There were iTrack studies that how people flipped the paper and stuff. Like, I think we overestimate that there was a single experience to begin with.
So, or that there should be.
An aspect of that, too, is that these news apps are taking it in the next step. They're using the content management system as a source via API, and they're shaping it however they want to, or... And I can imagine future systems allowing the user to shape it to some extent, you know, to tailor it.
Well, I'm more of a, you need to have a good data management, and the data needs to be as pristine and as nice as you can. So even if you're going back to 1861, having the data in there properly so you can display it. And the nice part about most content management systems is they totally separate the data and the display separately. So from a design perspective, if you want to go back and create some CMS to make the New York Times look like today's issue look like you were reading it 50 years ago, and that's not super hard. In fact, I recently, the New York Times decided to make their font on their stories bigger, and I think they're getting maybe 50 characters per line, which drives me batty from a typography standpoint. So I actually went in and custom changed the CMS template on my browser to force a wider. So, but to me, it's, I consume things in 50 different ways. So as a publisher, I am really good at modifying data to suit my specific needs. So 9 times out of 10, I actually take an RSS feed from the New York Times or wherever I'm reading it from. I post-process it, turn it into an EPUB or a MOBI format so I can read it on a mobile, and then I can change the font bigger, smaller, to my whim. But I'm mostly scraping the data I need to make it look or read the way I want. Or even systems like Rapid Serial Visual Presentation, where you literally, you see one word at a time flashed in rapid succession, you know, so I can read a lot faster. But to me, it's, you have to have the data first, and then you can have 70 different ways of actually looking at the data as an after-the-fact thing. But for researchers and archivists, it's nice to be able to say, hey, this is how it either looked or would have looked to get the context of the time and the culture of where the thing came from. Reading cuneiform on a digital format, it can be done, but does that give you a representation of the way ancient Assyrians actually did it? Mm-hmm. Not even close.
Yeah, there's nothing like in our newspaper archive with the stuff we processed from analog. We had the first newspaper published in the state in 1787, and I still marvel when I look at those pages in full color. You know, it was the Kentucky Gazette with an E on the end instead of a Y. That's how they spelled it for the first year, the 4 years of the publication. And so, there's a historical context in there. But it's almost like you want the best of both worlds to some extent.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We're lucky enough that we have departments that are doing both. So we're archiving the full site through Archive-It, and then through the reference department, for older newspapers or magazines, the full issue is preserved. And then for current stuff in my department, we're changing how it looks because we're looking at it at a reference point, so it's the content and not how it looked that is important. So if we're printing it from a digital source, we're already changing it. We're probably removing photos to create, so we're saving paper, whether we're using Instapaper or Paperly or Storify or Scoop-It or Pocket, even in plugins and Firefox, we're already changing the integrity of how, the words are there, but of the graphics, and reducing that. So we're trying to do both. Whether we have sustainability and staff to do both forever, I don't know.
In this context, what would you say is preservation? I mean, I think in many more traditional senses, preservation is preserving the artifact as it is and doing no harm to that artifact. Now, that comes from the physical world, and this is the digital world, but still, if you have digital artifacts, is the date of the digital artifact, or is the representation of that to the user the digital artifact? Any other thoughts about that?
Well, I was going to say make an argument for. I mean, it's different if you're thinking about organizationally and for corporate media. And to me, I think that probably uniformity is more important than the actual. What's making it uniform? Like, I would think if you had people, but I don't know. I'm not. I don't work for a big media company anymore, so maybe it changed. But my experience in working on going back and searching blogs, I can't tell you how much it mattered that people had, their blog roles right there. That's not something that you see anymore. Like the things that, and even though appearance-wise, it sounds ridiculous to be like, oh my God, that's so 1994.
Yeah.
But it really did. I mean, I felt like I had dived into a year, and it was an amazing, like the tone of it, feeling of it really ended up directing a lot of my search and a lot of my decision making, and that was like a really nice human part of it. The blog counter, like everybody had a little thing, it's like 23 people.
Yeah.
I don't think that sounds silly at all, because one of the things I often think about, having done, worked with digital technology for 20 years, and if you think about it, the internet hasn't really been around for much longer than that. The rapid progress of change, is so rapid. What's hot today, 2 years, 1 year, 2 years from now, can be completely different. Mm-hmm. So I do hold some significance in that historical context. But if we want to, say we wanted to do both things, because I did mention earlier the database stuff is fairly, I think it's more straightforward to back that up, or to preserve that, so to speak, with a backup procedure, or making sure you use a format that's non-proprietary and can be read by simple viewers. But capturing the output, the stuff that's dynamic, we have the Internet Archive example, of course, that's kind of an external entity coming in and scraping the site and getting it that way. Do you think there's some utility in having these content management systems deploy internal functionality that captures the static output in some way in an archiving?
Static or dynamic?
static.
I actually know a handful of people recently who have been, in it, even in journalistic circles. So I think about a month ago, Kevin Marks took sites from two or three journalists that they'd had. They hadn't touched in years. And the maintenance and security updates and patches were just too much. So he literally used, I think it was a WordPress plugin to create static HTML files. Spent an hour, spit them all out, put the website back up as a static. Here's what it looked like, and now I don't have to touch it. I don't have to do security. I don't have to do maintenance. It serves up a lot faster. But it was nice to have a few tools that would just spit out a simple static output for him, more or less. And he's built some other custom stuff for himself that takes things like that to spit them out. And it's, you know, to me, even the switch to digital, even on the book side, sometimes I miss the serendipity of walking to a bookshelf and seeing the 10 books on either side of the book that I came to pick up. So there's, you know, or even looking at the example of the New York Times today, seeing the ads that surrounded give you a humongous amount of context of that thing you're looking at, that if you just scrape only the data out, you're missing an awful lot of the simple style and cues, you know, the same way you would if you're reading a medieval manuscript and there's no spaces between the words, the typography is all out of whack, from a modern perspective at least.
I like that solution. I don't know if it's being absorbed, maybe the Internet Archive is ready to but the early days of LA Now, which is the local blog, because the CMS was too slow and clunky, so it went on TypePad, which is still around as a WordPress. And it's there now, but TypePad, I don't, any day, can go away, and extracting that is, that's, I wonder if TypePad has that tool.
Or if it doesn't, I think it's all PHP, so you can modify
it. But they have a tool to put it in WordPress.
So yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, is data portability is not. You know, if I look at a CMS system and it doesn't have export as, like, the top, you know, thing, next.
Well, one thing to think about, like the New York folks, they ended up, it sounded to me like they ended up doing this because they had these false pages that they couldn't really rectify with the data. Are these false hits with the data. And so it sounded like they kind of generated a static site and then started comparing that with what the data was showing.
Well, we didn't get the question that should have been asked at the end there is, did you do this more for yourselves and the archive? I get the impression they did it more for massive user database rather than the small, and the tough part is the small niche researcher, you know, contingent that's going to have to dig a little harder to find the things under the hood that they really want.
They at least have a market for, you know, archives, and that's clear.
Yeah. So they're the lucky 1%.
There's so much that can be done with APIs that I feel like as long as we're providing access to the content, that someone else can create an API to do whatever they need. To generate useful materials and useful data sets of some kind so that it's interpreting and giving them their own views, as long as we can make the original available and they look at the text as well.
A third thing that I've thought about in relation to this, and I think you touched, someone just touched upon it a little bit, is like, so all of these systems, when they're generating the HTML pages, they follow a process that's programmed in the PHP or the Python or whatever the programming language, if it's using Ruby or whatever. And another option would be, if you're migrating these things, to actually tease out what that is. Because if you can, at that point, generate...
That would give you some hooks into the... Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, keep the style, keep the CSS and things like that, the files that go with it.
So we talked a bit about, you know, context, like, you know, how something is published on a platform, with a block role or whatever, or the pop-up ads. There's another kind of context I think is becoming more and more important, and that's a given media object is created, but ends up being consumed in a whole range of different platforms and devices. And I was just trying to think about, you know, how one might try to track or record that for analysis after the fact. I don't know if this is true, but I suspect that the majority of the impressions for a given news article are now being consumed off-site, specifically with social media. I mean, actually, you know, Cliff Levin spoke to this a little bit yesterday, but I don't think he really had it right, because I think it's majority, it's not fringe. There's actually a publication called Distributed Bytes that comes out every Sunday. It's a newsletter. If you want to know about more of this phenomenon of media companies specifically creating content that is intended to be consumed not on their destination site, but rather externally on Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and all the rest of those kind of things. And there's a few things about that. One is the fact that in many cases the content is being modified, optimized for a particular platform, but in particular Snapchat. You have to make it specific for them, for technical and the other one is like, might there be a way to kind of try to capture this with metadata? So you have like, you know, the original, I'll just call it the original object, and then metadata about, you know, where it went. And something that I'm kind of caring about a lot these days is the way it's all through this thing here. And so one specific use case is the Apple News app. So the Apple News app, they've got more than 1,000 contracts with providers. And so that one, you know, window that is this interface into this whole world of quote-unquote news. And given the market dominance of Apple, et cetera, et cetera, it's a kind of a juggernaut, really, of a perception of news. And then I'll just end with this. You added the extra complication, it's all personalized.
Yeah.
So my version of it is your version of it. So I don't even know if what I was like suggesting about tracking with metadata and all that, I don't even know if it can be done anymore.
Yeah. Or if you can track how 50 different users got to see that bit of data.
But you may think about preserving the metrics of that. Like, I'm working on a metrics tool that is hopefully tell people how many, you know, what activity was on social media as well as their own site.
And what
are we? I don't think we've even thought of archiving that, except for historical reports to the customer. But
what would be the community experience of people reading about, say, some comments that we've learned about this weekend from Donald Trump on a newspaper website versus on a feminist community website versus a traditionally African American website?
Right.
You know, what's that content?
Especially if you're taking just a snapshot of the content itself primarily versus the secondary piece of comment that not a lot of people have mentioned this week are the comments. Mm-hmm. How long they go? Are they moderated? Are they unmoderated? Did those comments get deleted? Are they all spam? I actually use a model where I publish everything to my own website so I have more control over it and not only own the data, but I then syndicate it out for readership and reach or for various communities that I'm trying to reach. I'll cross-publish it to Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or any of 10 different places. But I've also built tools that go in and take the commentary and the likes and the retweets and suck that back out of those silos into the comment section of my own site. And it becomes an interesting to look at some of the posts and say, okay, this particular piece of content got way more traction on Facebook and there was a nice commentary flow. And I can see that in the comments because it says this comment came from Facebook. And you can follow that. And occasionally people will read it natively on my site and they get the benefit of all of the commentary rather than, oh, here's the conversation that happened on Twitter. They would never think to go to my Facebook page and read that as a secondary thing. So it's a totally disjointed thing, but in archiving it all back to my own site and owning it all, there's an easier, better way to do that. And I think that then becomes the bigger value add of seeing the original.
I like that you use the term snapshot, because in my mind I've thought of that as the term. I mean, I think as we've discussed here, and we can continue to discuss, but it seems like this question, both things are important. The data is important, the data is important. certainly, you know, it can be debated which one is more important, but I actually think they're both maybe equally important in many senses. Did you have a comment?
I had a question, actually, if anyone sure. knows. What happens to real-time analytics? Like, does that get archived at all?
Some of that is on the browser.
How far back can you go?
Pretty far, most of the, I mean, some of the big ones, like Adobe Amateur.
Can you just assume that you can go back as far as you've had it?
In most cases, as long as you've kept, so once you change your CMSs or your website design, and you change code, or you change metrics provider. You could keep it if you took some steps, but I don't know how often people do that. It's a good question.
Some of that is semi-generated on the browser level by JavaScript, though. It's fed data by the CMS, but the JavaScript at the browser level is actually...
Yeah, I think Google Analytics keeps the nature of it.
Yeah. And it costs them nothing. Mostly.
But, looking at both things, having importance, I will say for myself, I do like the idea of potentially having a content management system that has the ability to, quote-unquote, take a snapshot, kind of like a internal way back.
Well, version control has been, of those of us with CMS experience, is a feature we've asked for. We asked it in our internal one, and I know that...
But is that version control for the data or for the output? The version control mainly,
it's for the page that has fields for all the elements of the page. That's the version page that gets version control.
I guess what I'm talking about in a plugin that would be a snapshot kind of thing is it would at a given point in time, generate all the pages, like take a snapshot of the site at that given point in time, and certainly archive that in a version sort of way, like with a timestamp or something, that wouldn't, some backups overwrite one another, or you go three back and then the last one falls off the edge and gets deleted.
Right.
But I think with something like this, it would preserve those versions.
Well, with the concern with this, I mean, there is that historical concern, but the demand for the data seems to be greater. Correct me if I'm wrong, maybe even much greater than this relatively small number of people who want to see everything in context all the time.
One thing to consider with that, with most preservation strategies, there's a spectrum that you can land on, and there's often lots of factors that determine where you land, things in terms of cost and technical expertise. So I think just because something like this would be available in the content management system wouldn't necessarily mean that you'd have to deploy it. But it sounds like from the discussion here, though, that I think there are some folks that are on more on one side or the other, but I think we're all kind of on some of both sides. But I'm not sure. Do you know, Anna, do you know how much?
It is now 3:40,
so if we had to come up with kind of like, we had this discussion here.
Oh, we're open.
I think we started late, though. So.
Yeah, we started
3:50. Yeah,
3:50.
So, I debated how we would discuss this today because I think in general, all these content management systems that we're talking about essentially at a basic level kind of do the same thing in many ways. Some are more complex than others, some may be faster than others depending on how they're put together or how they're architected. They essentially use a data source and generate dynamic output on demand as pages are requested. So, are there any other questions about what we've talked about?
I have kind of a comment, but the advertising piece of this actually is so interesting now that I think about the ad server, the way it works, in a way, like you kind of could never, if the advertising parts are what we're interested in the print world, like that's never going to work.
Never.
Online.
Independently delivered. And
yeah.
Well, unless you're just got somebody who's at the root of most of the ad networks are very large clearinghouse servers that just pump out material.
Well, it's something.
So if you at least know what they're pumping out, you can, based on the eyeballs that were looking at the page, you could intuit what they would have seen in a reverse fashion, but it's not.
Yeah.
Archivally, it's
but
never.
It's not that.
Yeah. Yeah. The interesting comment about that, too, is that it's not coming from the database, it's coming from an external.
Yeah, third party.
But it's being pulled in from an external source.
Well, as I was talking earlier, that there's, you know, we're talking CMS, but there's multiple CMS. An ad server is another one, actually.
Things can get a little easier with AMP.
You start talking about all the pixels on the page, you want to sort of archive everything.
Well, when you think about it in that respect, though, then it brings up the question, is it better for an external service like a web crawler, like Archive-It, to do this job, you know, versus trying to do it from the CMS end?
Then you get the full preservation. So as archivists, we probably.
I'm sorry. Pardon the interrupt. The keynote's going on in the other room.
Oh, what?
So we are over.
Oh, I really wanted to get into that question. What do you?